Muslims now form the fastest-growing religious group in the United States. Let's be clear, it's a relatively small group, about 1% of the population. But over the next three decades, Muslims' share of the population is expected to almost double. NPR's Tom Gelton has been listening to the thoughts and hopes of some young Muslim Americans.
Growing up Muslim in America hasn't always been hard. This group of relatively devout young Muslims have some stories that are more hilarious than harrowing. Take the day Adam Spita and his friends stopped at a gas station in rural West Virginia.
It was time to pray, and we're like, hey, you know, we're getting gas, might as well just pray. So we pulled over, got gas, went inside, bought some drinks, went out, and we prayed next to our car.
You prayed next to your car in a gas station?
At a gas station.
Prostrating themselves on the ground alongside the gas pumps.
So we see the guy, and he's like eyeing us, like, who are these guys? Why are they doing yoga outside my gas station? So he comes out, and he goes, are y'all one of the Mohammedanians?
The socializing this evening is in Maryam Adamu's basement apartment in Washington, D.C. Her parents are from Nigeria, but Maryam grew up in Arkansas. Not such a bad place for a Muslim girl, she says, even one who wears a headscarf or hijab.
Because people were straightforward with what it was that made them uncomfortable. So, like, I get into the McDonald's line, and this lady was just like, are you wearing that for your religion about my hijab? And I'm like, great, we can have this conversation over my coffee, and I can keep going about my business, whereas I think...
Whereas here in Washington, she says, people may not acknowledge their discomfort, so Muslims don't know how they're seen. And then there's Aksa Mahmood, born in Pakistan, raised in Georgia. Some of her closest friends there were born again Jesus-believing Baptists for whom religious faith is to be respected.
I am so grateful to have been a Muslim growing up in the South. Only in the South could you say to your friend and be like, hey, you know what? I gotta pray. And they'd be like, of course. Like, they talk about God in a very personal way. Like, their relationship with Jesus made me want to have a close relationship with God, I'll be honest.
Aksa was in high school then. These young Muslims, now in their late 20s or early 30s, came of age in a more benevolent, hopeful time. After school, they found rewarding positions in the broader society. Aksa is a government lawyer. They all work for progressive causes. But as Muslim Americans, their world was altered by 9/11, the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, Al-Qaeda and ISIS. The last thing Aksa and her friends want to deal with these days is some terrorist group that claims to be Islamic.
I am so tired because there's so much work that we have to be doing in terms of inclusion in our communities, whether it's LGBT issues, whether it's racism in our spaces, gender inequality. There's so much, and they just added more to my effing plate, okay? And what they're doing is horrendous and horrible, and it needs to be handled and tackled. But honestly, like, I'll be honest, when I pulled up, like, you know, the front page, I clicked on the Planned Parenthood article before I clicked on ISIS, because that's more, you know, relevant to me.
But two of the males in this group warned the others that Muslims do have to take ISIS and its alleged ties to Islam seriously. Irfan Noureddin is a community organizer and former prison chaplain.
ISIS is not doing these things just nilly-willy. They're very methodic. So as a Muslim, if you go and you try to refute them, you're likely going to fail, because they'll be quoting scripture, sayings of the prophet, historical events from early Islam, and most Muslims don't have that. They're not equipped with the proper knowledge, and so ISIS thrives on our own ignorance and our lack of critical thinking.
Because some don't see how ISIS misinterprets scripture. ISIS may also benefit from its claim to be defending Islam and the Muslim community worldwide, what Muslims call the Ummah. That appeal resonates with Muslims around the world who have a more political, less spiritual understanding of their faith.
They've been worshiping either Islam or they've been worshiping the Ummah. They have not been worshiping God.
Miraj Al-Araka, a Muslim chaplain at George Washington University here in D.C., thinks young Muslims hear too many sermons, even in U.S. mosques, that call for solidarity or dua with Muslims around the world.
At the end of it, the person giving the sermon is like, you know, and let's make dua for our brothers and sisters in Palestine, Somalia, Iraq, Afghanistan, Pakistan, Bosnia. It's like, oh my God, I learned so much geography just because of this. You grow up around this. Right. And you're just like, man, if only there's a way to unify the Ummah, the Ummah, the Ummah. It's about this collective Muslim nation.
Adam, the guy who prayed at a gas station, says he saw the strength of this appeal when he was in Libya, where his family comes from.
I know of people that were in Libya, Libyan natives, who went and were like, yeah, what we did here in Libya we're going to go do there in Syria and help them out. And then when we're done with Syria, we're going to go to Iraq. And when we're done with Iraq, we're going to go to Palestine. And when we're done with Palestine, you know, everything's going to be fine and dandy.
If ISIS was not doing these crazy, like, heinous acts, then I think people would be going over there in the thousands.
Mirage again, the college chaplain.
I know this for a fact. Yeah. I can tell you that people would go and leave because they'd be like, this is the opportunity we've been waiting for, and now we can actually do something instead of just praying.
At this, his friend Yasmin El-Hadi is ready to jump out of her chair.
I have a really big problem with that because—
So do I.
What is that based on? What is that based on, Mirage? You can't make a statement like that boldly and say, I know for a fact. What fact?
Yeah.
What does that stand upon? Your own personal experiences? I'm sure you have students that are confused. They feel, okay, well, this verse, I'm kind of concerned about it. It does seem to support ISIS position, whatever. And it shakes them. It shakes their faith.
But that doesn't mean they're tempted to go off and fight, she says. Back to Irfan, the community organizer.
On one extreme, you have the Yahoos, right? And they're going to go and be attracted by that rhetoric. But on the other side, you have the regular Muslim, and they're just like, maybe they're not feeling it anymore. I mean, I know personally, I get emails all the time, people who come to me now and say that they're atheists.
Growing extremism and growing atheism are both troublesome developments to these Muslims. They differ on how many people are drawn to ISIS, but they agree with Irfan that Muslims need to deepen their faith, not abandon it.
I had someone tell me they're going to basically walk out of Islam. I said, before you distance yourself, just give me a few weeks. Before we kind of like just throw the baby out with the bathwater, I think we all need to kind of take a step back and kind of rehash our own understanding.
That's the idea that brought this group together this night and will again on nights to come. Tom Gelton, NPR News.